that negotiation is important. We would like the chairperson and the CEO to talk to us about those, amongst others. So over to you, Ndateng Lokoti.
Thanks, Chair. We have a delegation of three people here from the Municipal Demarcation Board. Myself, William Lokoti, Hilary, you all know Hilary, the Chief Executive Officer of the Board. And we have the new Chief Financial Officer in the Board, Mr. Nick Lukagi. So he's here with us. So they'll be sharing the presentation with Hilary. Come again. Okay. I think we'll note that, Chair. We'll note that. So I will actually ask the three of us, so we'll have Hilary presenting, and after which there's nobody to ask for questions that deal with them when that time away. We'll start with the schedule of the task here. We'll give you the two documents, the annual report, which the report actually captures both the annual report as well as the start plan, as well as all the budget matters that you'd want to hear, and which are important for this committee here. We've also made available a section which you can talk to, which explains the number of things that pertain to decisions of the board that were taken on the 29th of February. Over to you, Larry.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members. As the Chair just knows, the board has already said, although we have come to present an annual report, you will see that from time to time we talk about activities that actually happen well beyond the current financial year. Just as raised by the Auditor General in his report of 2006-07 on the audit of the board. I will then hand over to Nick to talk about our receipt and expenditure for the period under review, after which I will look at our output for the year and the strategic direction going forward. Once again, Nick will talk to you about the budget programs, and I will conclude in the end. We still have 9 members of the board, and the chairperson remains the only full-time member. I, as CEO, am in charge of the board administration, which is made up of 4 clusters, operational clusters. We have 27 staff positions in the establishment, and as at the end of January this year, we had 8 vacancies. We are 74% black and 47% female. And recently, the board approved a proposal to review the structure just so as to ensure that we are ready and to tackle the future challenges coming our way. Now, the last time we briefed this committee, Chairperson, was in October 2007, and we went over our past reports back to you on progress we had made with respect to some key issues and queries that were raised by this committee on certain aspects of our operation and expenditure. Now, we continue to deal with these issues in our presentation, Chair, to you, because we believe they remain important. And therefore, we want to really reassure the committee that we remain conscious of these issues, and that is why we will keep revisiting them for you to be reassured that they remain very important to us. Now, once again, to recap briefly, those concerns and reservations that have been raised in the past, they included, firstly, the issue around the board expenditure, the way in which it rises from year to year, and with respect to a number of expenditure items. There was also the issue around the way in which we employ consultants and the cost involved in employing them, possibly taking to a certain portion of our budget. There was also the issue around the salaries that have been paid to staff, and a request to provide the portfolio committee with information on how it's broken down to make sure that it is appropriate, and also that the board may be spending money on things that are not relevant to its core mandate. we have been able to provide in detail in the past, Chair, the issues, the requests that we were faced with, that we came from this committee, a breakdown of all expenditure incurred on professional fees and on office expenses. We indicated clearly the expenditure on professional fees, that it was fully justified and that it was incurred in direct pursuance of our core mandate. We explained the fact that our expenditure on consultants was fully justified. We also demonstrated to the committee chair that staff salaries are fine and that there is nothing excessive about them, and explained how staff salaries are made up and the board. And also the issue of the board members' remuneration, we have said that those are simply what the minister determines for them. With respect to travel, we have said that board members do have to travel a lot and all to attend meetings and to deal with other issues of the board. We also briefed this committee chair on the report of the AG for the year that ended 31st March 2007. We said that within that report, that is given by the AG, was an unqualified political opinion that has been given. There were some matters that came up as well with respect to irregular expenditure as a result of procurement of consultants, not being in accordance with certain regulations, as outlined there, issues of supply chain management, and so on. Also, non-compliance with certain regulations 15.10.1.1, the issue that was raised again, the material corrections made to the financial statement for audit, and a number of inactive accounts found on the server that with respect to the IT issues. There were also those other issues with the management of passwords and the regular password changes not always being enforced. Lack of documented and approved IT security policy, disaster recovery plan, and user management procedures. The issue of not having an IT steering committee, and at the time, and they were saying there were no backups that were active at the time. Now, many of these matters raised in that report would seem to be a repeat of the 2506 report, and we had said that last year, saying that there are very valid explanations to the queries. And a very brief explanation there that the regular expenditure that was been spoken about with respect to two service providers, they had been contracted at the time, and we decided that we needed to allow the contract to run their course, knowing fully well that it would trigger another irregular expenditure, but then we faced the worst case of being in breach of contract if we moved the other way. So there was that. But then we had said that in subsequent years, we don't expect to have such cases coming up. Basically, we say that we were expecting the 2607 query in that regard to be the last. We are now happy to report that there has now been improvement with respect to supply chain management. We have proper policies and procedures in place in that regard. In compliance with Regulation 15.10.1.1 that I spoke to earlier, we now have a bank cash management policy. And with that in place, there is now the daily review and preparation of the reconciliations at the board. And then, of course, there's the statements that have been spoken about, we spoke about earlier, that the AG referred to. It was a systems problem where we found the accounting system not recalculating depreciation on the net carrying amount, but instead recalculating it on some assets from the time when the asset was first used. The result of that was that the difference of 48,000 came through, and that's the query. With respect to the inactive accounts, we've been able to explain once again how we manage our user accounts, and we believe that this explains how the AG's queries in this regard can be explained quite satisfactorily, that all these issues that they are raising, they're not spot on. And we have had a meeting with them since then to explain these things, and they've come to understand some of those issues. We now have an approved IT security policy. We now have a disaster recovery plan. We have a user management procedure. and we also have an IG steering committee operating. Our management committee also doubles up as an IG steering committee. That's given the size of our organization. The board has since that report and been monitoring the implementation of our recommendations quite closely. And there's been significant progress, Chairperson. Our audit function is fully functional. It has been outsourced. And we are pursuing a deliberate strategy to ensure that the AG must, for his upcoming external audit, rely on the work of our internal auditor. The idea being to ensure that they spend less time on the audit at the board, because we want to cut the cost of external audit, which has over time been growing quite worryingly. But we have a very deliberate strategy in place to ensure that doesn't happen and that cost can actually be cut on that. I'm now going to hand over to Nick for the next few slides to take you through the figures.
The financial statements that are tabled before this committee have been prepared based on a 10-month period from 1st of April 2007 to 31 January 2008. In the first slide there, we indicate the receipts that have been budgeted for this period, which is the original MTF allocation of 20.6 million. And the other income, which includes bank and interest on the bank account and sale of meth, which we do on a cost recovery basis. However, for the period under review up to 31 January, we had only received up to the third quarter 14.2 million and made 341,000 on other income. Moving on to the next slide. However, I must also mention back on this one that on the MTF allocation, we've seen a growth of 22.8% from prior year, where we see the Department and Treasury allocating further funds for the board. The next slide indicates the expenditure for the MDB for the 10 months. I will just quickly go through the major items. We have bus costs, which make up 38% of our expenditure, or in case of our expenditure. Project expenses, which is mainly our capacity assessments, at 3.8 million, which makes up 26% of our expenditure. For this period, the net result is that our expenditure exceeded our income for the period by 372 million, which leaves us at a deficit. However, it was just this issue was mainly contributed by the delay in the receipt of the allocation on the fourth quarter. We only received the funds during February. On the draft annual report, we on page 18, we do have a note to indicate that it is not necessarily a deficit, which I'll talk to that later on the slide. $372,000. As previously, the committee requested to see the breakdown of the expenditure. We just indicate in here the breakdown of all those expenditures. The major items there, you see insurance is just short-term insurance on our fixed assets. Members' allowance is meeting fees and time taken by the part-time board members to attend to board business. The internal audit fees relate to a contract awarded to a supplier where an accounting firm, which is they are in the process of improving our controls so that the AG can rely on the work of the auditor by thus reducing the time and the cost. Under general and administrative and administrative expenses, advertisement and publications, those two items that are mainly on the notices and as prescribed by legislation, or especially on our on the call boundary determination and the recruitment on the advertising is on the side of recruitment of HR. The next slide indicates the staff where 21 employees at the end of January are part of the MDB, and staff and salaries amount to 4.7, board emoluments and UIF contributions, which brings up the total to 5.5 million. The project expenses as requested by the committee, we indicate that it's consulting fees and the capacity of assessment, which is 3.8 million. This is just a breakdown of further operating expenses, and a majority of that is travel and subsistence, and that is the movement of when board members and also research team do investigations on boundaries and capacity assessments. Another major portion there is also on the rent, which for the period renting of building has been 725,000, and also on our lease payment for office equipment. Just to recap on the financial performance, the trend is the same. There's been growth of 23%. We're also looking in the next financial year that we've received also another 23%. So we are moving in the right direction. The deficit, as explained earlier on, is due to the delay in the transfer of the government grant. We've subsequently received the 6.4 million, and which indicates in our projections that we want will be in line. The sale of MEPs has been fairly consistent with the previous years. And the other thing to point out is that the finance costs that we show of 13,000 relate to the interest portion on the finance lease, which we entered into in 2005. The lease is to expire in 2010, so we'll see that finance cost going through. The projections to year-end indicate that the board will spend within this allocation, and we are exercising tight budgetary controls in that area. I thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Let me then proceed with the other slides. Let's look at the outputs and developments to date and in the current financial year. Now, in line with our mandate, Chairperson, we did work and had output for the period under review in a number of areas of work as listed on the slide. Determination and establishment of municipal boundaries, assessment of municipal capacity and recommendations to NEC, review of DMAs with a view to withdraw them, assistance government departments to align their service delivery boundaries to municipal boundaries, enhancement of engagement and improved relations with stakeholders, enhancing and promoting good governance, and enhancing and improving capacity and capability in the organization. Now, if we look at each one of those areas, Chair, I'll go through major developments. The chairperson did say earlier that we have distributed one further document, and that is circular 1 of 2008. That circular outlined in detail the kind of decision that have come through recently from the board, and I will be touching on them. But if committee members do need the detail, they would need to go to that circular. Otherwise, it would take us too long to go through it in this PowerPoint presentation. Now, we continued this year with a program to ensure that we are able to finalize all of our boundary changes. The idea being that we want to hand over to the IEC the municipal boundaries by August this year, for them to work on the boundaries and to prepare for the upcoming national provincial elections. And we assume this will be in April 2009, to be followed by local government elections, which we also, I presume, will happen and take place in March 2011. Now, this means that we will stop accepting all new requests on boundary changes on the 31st of March 2008. That's in 2 weeks. Is it 2 weeks now? Yes. Once we hand over boundaries to the IEC in August for them to start working on the DVDs, all boundary changes will then be put on hold until after 2011, after the local government elections come in 2011. These timelines, Chair, give an indication of development going forward. You will see that included in the timelines is a recategorization of selected secondary cities and a review of some district municipalities. So there's some interesting work coming through where the board will consider declaring some secondary cities to become metros. I will talk more about that. And also a review of some district municipalities that are also touched on later. On the 29th of February 2008, the board took key decisions on redetermination cases. And details of those decisions, as I said, are in Circular 1 of 2008. Now, I'm going to be touching very, very briefly in the next few slides on these cases on a province-by-province basis. Looking at the Eastern Cape, one case was closed after the MEC and the board agreed that there is now a new submission that affected area concerns, so there was no need to pursue both cases. There were two new requests that were referred to the affected municipalities and the MEC for comment, and the parties were given till 10th of March to come back to the board. If there's failure in that regard, then we will go the Section 26 notice route to test public opinion. Five new requests received from the MEC were accepted by the board in terms of Section 22 of the Demarcation Act. Now, the board resolved to publish a Section 26 notice to test public opinion. 15 April 2008 has been set as a closing date, and we're looking to accept submissions then. And the board determined with respect to three cases. Section 21 notices will be published, have been published, with 30 days for the submission of objections. And also in respect to two cases, the board has confirmed that was following the Section 21 objection period. Now, with respect to one case, we're waiting for the MEC in the Eastern Cape to gazette a Section 23 notice and to determine the effective date. If we move now to KZN, Chair, we had the board losing one case because the proposal was splitting a TA, an area there. So it was closed. There was one new request to the process of received from the MEC. It was submitted to the municipality after being accepted as a Section 22 request. The board also resolved to go the Section 26 notice route for us to receive submissions within 21 days. With respect to five cases, we had the board returning the boundaries and saying, go ahead and publish a Section 21 notice. And in one case, the parties have been afforded an opportunity to consult further on the matter. And if they do not come back to the board with an agreement by the 20th of April, the board will proceed and confirm the boundary. That's KZN. If we look at Gauteng province, one case has been closed because the MEC failed to reach agreement with the municipality affected. So there was no determination there. And the more time was allowed with respect to one case for the province and the affected municipalities to reach an agreement, once again by the 30th of April. We still wait await a Section 26 notice from the MEC with respect to one case. The Free State, the board approved application of Section 26 notice, that's one case. Normally 21 days for submission of views, then on. The board also approved the publication of a Section 1 notice with respect to another case. Once again, the normal time period is 30 days, which the board has allowed. In Mpumalanga, the board resolved to publish a Section 21 notice with respect to the one case with 30 days for objection. Looking at Limpopo, Chairperson, the board approved the publication of the Section 21 notice with respect to one case, and this followed an agreement between the MEC and the affected municipalities on an option and boundary change that would not split communities. So we had that movement of the interaction between the MEC and the municipalities. In four cases, with another case, just a minute.
I'm just saying, one, it is still confidential because we always refer to many cases in that law.
What is the suggestion, Chair? That we go through the detail of each? Okay. Let me. No, it's not actually. We are now at Limpopo. Yes. Yeah. As I said earlier, Chairperson, the details are in this circular. But I'll be happy to go through them. Okay, and I was still saying with respect to those four cases, more time has been allowed, Chair, for the joint proposal to come to the board by the 30th of March. And if that is not received, the board will take a decision on Section 21 notice. We still await Section 23 notices with respect to four cases from the MEC in Limpopo. And in this case, there was an incorrect gazette cited. Now we're waiting for the corrected version. And in the Western Cape, there was a resolution there that a Section 21 notice be published with respect to two cases. And with the other two cases, we still await the Section 23 notices. The Northwest Province, there is a case on the proposed amalgamation of two municipalities. A Section 21 notice was published, but the board has decided to allow the MEC and the municipalities more time to reach an agreement and to submit further inputs by no later than 20th of April. We await that. If they are not able to do that, then the board would regard the re-termination. And the re-termination was to amalgamate two municipalities, Molopo and Kahisano. If they can't come back with something different, the board will confirm that redetermination. And we still await some three notices as well from the MEC in the Northwest. Finally, Chair, with in the Northern Cape, there's a case Northern Cape Northwest. It's a cross-boundary issue where the Northern Cape legislature asked us, the board, to look at the matter. We did say that, advise the legislature that we no longer have a mandate to deal with cross-boundary matters, and we advise them to approach the Department of Justice on the amendment of the Constitution. The board has also initiated a process to look at areas of three secondary cities, Msunduzi, Mangaung, and Buffalo City. The idea being to look at redetermining them as Category A municipalities. The details are in the circular as well. There's also a case initiated by the board where there's proposal to determine the boundary. countries of Swan and Ekurhuleni, Metsweding, such that Metsweding would be split between Swan and Ekurhuleni, and there will therefore no longer be, that Metsweding will basically be disestablished.
Moving now to the capacity assessment, Chairperson. This area of work we have tackled from year to year, and we continue to tackle it. The project has been outsourced, as in the past, and this is the only area of work that we still outsource. The timeline has become very, very standard. The idea being to be able to deliver a product on time to the MEC to allow them to interact with the product and deliver it effectively, which means that we start our planning in June 2007. By July, we're able to send out the questionnaires to the local and the districts, which is followed by the visit in August of each year. Since last year as well, in August 2007, we were out there collecting the data. Once again, we got 100% return in that regard. That's how we work, Chair. We don't work on a sample at all. We have captured data, we have verified, and that happened in September, October. We released the 46DC reports that we had drafted, and we released them in December 2007. The provincial overview reports, the 9 of them, and the national report has been finalized in the last month, in February 2008. And a very big event is coming up next week. On the 18th of March, the board will for the first time be launching a national report with Pride. A very important area of work that we continue to work on during the period under review, Chair, is the review of the future of DMAs. We have gone through a process of engaging stakeholders. We collected data. We released a framework document that we used to engage stakeholders. The report that I'm talking about was released in July 2007, and we published notices to withdraw those once again to ask for submissions in October. As a process of dealing with that. Now, as we indicated in our report, the 2007 report, we want to withdraw all declarations of DMAs, and we have a number of advantages that we want to draw your attention to. It means that the full territory of the country will be covered by municipalities. We won't have to deal with a separate electoral system for the DMAs. All voters will be within wards, and they'll be able to vote like anybody else. The issue, the confusion around service delivery in DMAs will be rectified, and we won't have an issue as to who does what in the division of powers and functions. We will have spatial stability, and the confusion around the boundaries of conservation areas will be overcome, because there's always been that disjunction between the boundaries of the DMA and those of the conservation areas that will be overcome. So those are the advantages that we see as important as we push forward to withdraw the declaration of all DMAs. The next few slides give a very short indication of how far we have gone with the review. The board recently resolved to confirm the withdrawal of the declaration of DMAs in the Eastern Cape, in Gauteng, the Free State, in Mpumalanga, the Western Cape, and the Northern Cape. They are listed on the slide, Chair. And the details, once again, are in Circular 1 of 2008. The board also resolved to withdraw the declaration of DMAs and determining the boundaries and publishing a Section 21 notice. There's a difference between the two, Chair. Section 21 part means that Section 21 already been published, we received objections, and the board moved that to confirm. The second group, the board has predetermined. It means we are inviting objections, and we will then close and confirm later at the board. And that's with respect to the Western Cape, Northern Cape, and Limpopo. Cape and KwaZulu-Natal with respect to those DMAs, the board resolved to hold the confirmation of the boundaries and the publication of 1981-5 notice in abeyance, because there was a case in both cases that we need to hear more from the stakeholders and the MEC. So that time was given, and that is why the board decided to hold that in abeyance. And finally, the board has resolved not to redetermine the boundaries in those cases, but rather to have meetings convened with the board member chairing the meeting and with the staff of the board providing technical assistance, and also those DMAs in the Western Cape and the Northern Cape. So the decision will have to come later in that. That's a summary, Chair, of how far we have gone with the DMAs. Once again, the details are in the circular. What you will see in the next two slides is an indication of the time frames and by which the DMA review process is unfolding. The idea is to finalize outer boundaries for municipalities by May 2008. And by May, we will know exactly which DMA falls where, and there will be no confusion there by that time. That's the idea. The idea, once again, is to finish all urban DMAs in time to hand over to the IEC by August 2008. Remember, I said earlier that we want to hand over all boundaries to the IEC by August 2008, and we have now paired the urban DMAs with the rest of them of the boundaries. Another area of work that we have been doing, working on service delivery boundaries, we have continued to work with the Department of Justice and the SAPS. We had arrangements made to finalize our involvement in the financial year, but recently we had the Department of Justice coming back to us to say, we need you to stay with us for longer, continue supporting us, and therefore it looks like we will be working with the Department of Justice for much longer. They have other issues that they need to cover, and they need our support. We have interacted with a number of stakeholders, Chairperson, some of which are listed on the slide. An important area that I want to mention is the creation of a credible PA data set that we've been working on with the DPLG, with the Department of Land Affairs, and with the Department of Water Affairs and Forestry. We worked a lot last year. The traditional authority data set, because the background to that, Chairperson, was that there was always a challenge when trying to determine where the boundaries of traditional areas ran. The idea was that let's work on a data set that will be credible, that we can all rely on, and that's an initiative that we're working on. That work continues. The idea was that this year we will start by going into the provinces to confirm those boundaries, but given that it's been driven from the DPLG side, we must still do that. The chairperson addressed the South African Planning Session. It was an important event, and we're still working with DPLG and SAUSA on some project and initiatives. We also engaged the Select Committee on Provincial Local Government on local government administration on a bill, a very important bill, and we appreciate that kind of invitation. We're continuing to do important work in promoting good governance. And those are the number of projects that I referred to that we have continued to work on. It remains a very important work for us because we cannot let down on improving administrative processes and systems, on improving financial and procurement practices, and so on and so on. Organizational capacity and capability, something we cannot let down on. We have continued to engage a number of projects to enhance and improve operational capacity. Number of projects as well outlined in there, always running with them to ensure that we are on top of things.
Now, all the work that we have been doing on boundary determinations and other areas with your DMA, alignment of service delivery boundaries, they all do play a significant role, Chairperson, in our preparations, our readiness for the 2009 national, provincial, and 2011 local government elections. We have therefore been working very, very closely with the IEC, with the DPLG, as I said earlier, to prepare for both elections. We are looking in pursuit of that. At publishing the last Section 21 notices for 21 elections, we are saying, because we said we will stop receiving all submissions by the end of March. Same time, we will be passing the last Section 21 notices so that we are able to move forward. We will then work towards handing over the boundaries by August. I've already said that. The idea being that the IEC can divide the National Common Voter Roll into multiple segments by February next year. Elections, as we said, April 2009, and preparation for limitations will start immediately after the elections. Looking at handing over the final ward boundaries to the IEC by June 2010. So that's looking very, very much ahead to make sure that the timelines are understood by everybody. And then, of course, as we said, we presume the elections, the next local government elections, would be in March 2011. So those are the timelines. The details are there, Chair. You have a few more slides with you. Okay, thank you. Just looking briefly at our strategic direction going forward, Chairperson. A few slides that outlines our approved strategic plan for the period 2008-2011-2012. We work in terms of themes, and strategic theme 1 and 2 involve the determination and determination of municipal boundaries and the delimitation of wards and a core mandate of the board. Theme 3 deals with the capacity assessment that I spoke about. It remains a very important theme for us that we work as part of our mandate. Theme 4 involves the declaration of DMAs. I've just spoken about the DMA issue. The idea being to withdraw all DMA declarations. And theme 5, working with departments with aligning service delivery boundaries. Theme 6, key stakeholders, interacting with them, relating to them. Theme 7, strengthening our organizational capacity and capability. And theme 8, dealing with good governance, always working towards strengthening and ensuring good governance. Next, you want to speak to the slide.
Thank you. This slide just looks at the MTEF outlook as 2008 as we sit now. We indicate that in the next financial year, beginning 1st of April 2008-09, we have received 25.4 million, which subsequently allocated after our strike session, and we are, those funds are optimal for us to achieve our objectives. However, from 2009-10, excuse me, there is a shortfall. Our allocation is 34.8 million compared to program, which according to our stress test, feeds in to 53.8 million. The reason for such a huge increase is the planned ward limitation, which is a process which must be taken prior to the elections. These specific activities or projects will cost the board 28.3 million. And following to the leading on to going to 2010-11, there's also a shortfall of just over half a million. And the reason for such an increase also is ward delimitation, which exposed over to 2010-11, costing us 10.3 million. We are obviously going to engage Treasury and the Department to review our allocation during the year. Thank you.
Just in conclusion, Chair, I'm just confirming what I've been saying, that what is important to say there is that we will stop receiving new submissions on the 31st of March 2008, and also that all our work, everything is geared at making sure that we are ready to hand over to the IEC for them to prepare for the national provincial election 2009 and local elections in 2011. And finally, that we efforts are underway to ensure that we align our the white paper process time frame with the election preparation time frame, because the chairman of the board had an engagement with the minister to raise the concern that the white paper process has got to fall in line with the election preparation so that one doesn't upset the other. That effort continues. Then we have a new set plan, which we spoke about briefly. Thank you.
Just to check on the schedule that was made available to members, so that those members read the schedule, they understand exactly what it contains. The schedule is actually made available for two reasons. Firstly, to update members of the committee, National Assembly, on the legal positive reasons regarding all the matters listed here. That's the first thing. Second thing, we want to ensure that members are enabled to be able to deal with matters such as this contained when they consult and or confronted with such questions from the community. Because the circular does go plans to begin to dictate the logic behind and the specific them. So that's the first thing I want to say. The second thing is that we are working on the assumption that legislation will not change. We would have loved to see the amendments coming into effect before the next local elections, but we are working on the assumption now that the current legislation and all government will not change. The Finance Act, the schedule that determines the way in which you must manage water limitation will remain intact, that the provinces will remain as they are, that the number of districts may remain as they are, and that the current system of government may remain as it is. So what's my assumption? In terms of our submissions, the department and our engagement with them, we had hoped that by possibly this time around we would have seen a green paper and possibly, you know, having a clear understanding in terms of the lines we pursued. We now think in terms of what we see, that is, even if the cabinet takes a decision in June on the draft white paper, we might not see it coming into effect during the next election, which is 2009. That's our observation now. So that's the second point. So the circular therefore assumes that the IEC will certify the voters' roll next year in March, and that the minister will determine the formula for the number of councillors by March 2009 in terms of the current legislation. So that is contained in the circular. What's the problem assumption? So we have that kind of assumption that actually permeates through all these items that you were presenting here. We talk about this, the DMA, Hillary has spoken about that. We're also talking about here, which is one issue that they possibly may raise some eyebrows, is the work that what we want to do with regard to districts in the country, the Beijing Business Valley, which is the Kaohsiung, as well as the reconfiguration of Alpha and Zo and Huarcambo. So the two districts which have two local authorities in the country are now on the table for us to review them. On the first one, which is the Alpha and Zo, Huarcambo, we are responding to a provincial request. On the Kaohsiung one, we are taking the initiative as a board, coupled with the reports that have been produced by the Kaohsiung government on the sustainability of methodying as a municipality, and therefore we're saying that we must still look at that. The last point which is contained here is what the other general raised about the recalibration of the metros, of the government cities into metros, which I think is an important issue. I think when questions are raised, we can then to get into details about what is pushing the board to move ahead on those matters. Thank you.
Chair and honourable members, and Dr. Loboti and and his team. Thank you very much. I think, first of all, Chair, as usual, thanks for the wonderful presentation from the demarcation board. I think it is very clear and explicit. However, Chair, just point of clarity, and I'll raise one issue. I may be out of order, you rule me towards the end. But on page 7 of this, of what, I think, I don't know, slide number 14, I think, it's the question of outsourcing of the internal audit function. I think the case is being made there that is, it is towards actually addressing the issues raised by the auditor general. And they say, well, you will have to rely on the web of our internal auditor. So that is said there. This thing of outsourcing, which is, in my view, similar to consultancy, which by nature is expensive, I would like them to really comfort us around the question of expenditure. Because I'm coming to this question of the expenditure at the end. That is one thing. Then the next one, Chair, is on my constituency, the Eastern Cape as a province. I'm happy that I'm able to actually deal with this case. There's one case that they said is on slide number 24. That's where I am. They said there was a case closed, MEC submission, thing like that, of course, which has been clarified in the circular number 1 of 2008. I'm raising one issue which is burning, especially in my constituency, Flagstaff, where there was a submission which the demarcation board, I know, did attend, where Flagstaff wanted certain parts that were formed part of Imuza Baugeni local council to form a separate municipality. I know there's some work that the demarcation board did and refer to the MEC. I don't see it in the circular. If they could clarify that, because I know last week there was a major meeting which the department attended and which they invited the demarcation board. We had to go there. I had to be called to diffuse tension there. And I would love that situation to be clarified. Then, similarly, what I'm on that, I'm happy that he's explaining the question of O.R. Tambo and Bizana areas being there. I think they are doing well there. But the question of what I saw in the circular, that there is an indication that the changing of words, that is something that is a no thing. And, for instance, the board will not call on stakeholders not to make written on the board pertain to wide boundaries at this point in time. That's what is written on page number 1 of 2008. Does it mean that those complaints that have been raised on WAS are not going to be considered at all? I would like to have clarity there. Chair, the next one on Gauteng, another case closed. The question of, I don't know if Morofong, if I'm going to put it that way, the one not affecting the northwest boundary thing, I know that they have taken a principal position that they are bombarded, with which I agree. And the case that is pertaining to that, that's what I wanted just to clarify, in view, of course, of the public statements and, of course, threats that are emanating from that community, which has been recently published in the press. And then the last thing from me is the question of finances, which I raised first, but I now raise it to the last, I think, slide number 5, 6, we did raise as a committee some time, whilst understanding, of course, the question of budgets and budgetary constraints and budgetary needs of the Michigan Municipal Demarcation Board. But we did voice that to budget, when we allocated money and over budget, it's a problem that we have raised. And we did encourage a dialogue, which I'm happy that they said there's a dialogue between the department and themselves. But I'm worried I'm thinking the other bit, in the light of that interaction with us previously, that, for instance, for 2009 to 2010, they are now budgeting over budget of 9.1 million. Are there any prospects of getting that money? And why is Manchester Port continue to over budget, as it were? If they know that they've got this amount that has been allocated, bearing in mind, of course, that they have tried to persuade the powers that be to grant them money, which I don't think that this committee would object to that, but would like the Municipal Demarcation Board actually to really work and work effectively and to become capacitated accordingly. That is the same thing then for 2010 to 2011. They are, of course, also foreseeing a 584 over budget again. If they could clarify that, Chair, I would appreciate it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much for the board for a very good and comprehensive report, and congratulations on the good Auditor General's report for the last year. It's really impressive. And on just that, I just want to express myself, you know, the things that the Auditor General sometimes ask are so technical, the things that they mention there, you know, it is really difficult to attend to all those small matters, and one does ask whether they really make a difference. But I see that you are even going to strive to meet what has been mentioned there, but it's really, if you look at those things, to my mind, it's so small that you have actually done nearly 100% of what is expected there. I would just like to ask on the new metros, the moment you grant these metros that status, others stand in line. So I would just like to ask, do you have in your mind clarity that these metros that you are proposing are standing out and that there are a gap? I know here in the Western Cape, Drakenstein is also dreams of becoming a metro. Drakenstein. So I just want to send from you, will you be able to defend yourself that this is standing out? And secondly, you also say in the presentation somewhere that for provincial borders to change, they can't apply to you. You're not the Municipal Demarcation Board. To whom must a community apply for a change then in your mind? I mean, is it to us because the constitution has been written and the provinces' boundaries are in the constitution, or the minister, so just a sense, I think we should really, if there's specifically Kutsong, if there is application from there of feelings that one should attend to that, and one would just like to have clarity. What does a community do in this regard? Who do they approach? And lastly, I would just like to ask your quality annual assessments, which you also outsource. What does the MEC does with those reports? What are you satisfied that they are attended to? Do they really change things? Or what is the purpose? You know, really, I feel that is a very important aspect of your work. One just feels, or I personally feel that in practice it doesn't make a big difference, that it's as if that's not attended to. Am I wrong, or what is the purpose behind
Thank you very much.
No, thank you, Jefferson. Also, I echo my appreciation on the report. Just one question around outsourcing. I think the issue of giving your experience as well as your mandate in terms of assessing municipal capacity. I just want to know what is the basis of your, for instance, the terms of reference that you give whoever will be outsourcing? Because I think having dealt with municipalities, you should be aware of, for instance, their capacity, but what would your definition of capacity be that will guide those who will be taking over the role of assessment? Because politically and otherwise, I'm sure this is linked even to the political process, the issue of powers and functions, and then which is very sensitive. I just want to see how you monitor it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think this was an eye-opener for me because it's the first time that I get to listen to how these demarcations are made or constituted. Pardon? Yes, to this committee. I'm looking at the board members here, and on page 4 or slide 4, where you still say you have got 8 vacant posts as per 31st of January 2008, I would like to know whether these posts have already been filled. And secondly, when I look around here, I don't even see one lady accompanying the board members. And thirdly, I see a 0% for disabled. I'm not sure whether the work done by the board, it's so much that a disabled person cannot be part of the board. And secondly, you spoke about Limpopo. I come from Limpopo. There has been some, complaints of the boundaries cutting across the communities, even the wards. And I see that you say if no response is being brought to you by the MEC, you use a notice, 1321, to make a decision. I want to know that is this decision going to be what it was, or is a decision that will say we are not going to divide the communities or the wards because that causes a lot of conflict in the communities. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, sir. The board had for some time had internal audit function performed with a person who was employed by the organization. In the last 3 years, we experienced a problem with regard to the persons leaving the organization, not staying in the organization for far too long. And we then ventured into having a partnership with a service provider that would actually provide a service to the board. We thought hard about whether we should actually do this function, perform this function internal or actually outsource this function. And I think the cost benefit analysis that was done actually indicated that there's going to be less cost if we do so, if we have this function done by an outside agent than if it's done by a fully fledged unit of the organization, given the size of the organization and our budget and the work that the board actually performs. So in terms of costing, we're advised that, and I think we saw it as well in the number of reports, that there were less costs in terms of having this functional cost as compared to what we had before having to sell. So I think that the money we can give the specifics in terms of the direct figures. Then I say that with regard to how getting flexed out, we're aware, honorable member, that there was a request from FlexDAF to become a separate municipality outside Haugeni municipality. And I attended a number of meetings there, and I think with the community in Flagstaff, we as an organization took a decision that it would not be feasible at that time to have a municipality established in the name of Flagstaff. We looked at a number of factors around sustainability, financial viability, revenue base, and all the factors that we have in legislation. But after that engagement with the community, we then suggested, which I did to the MEC, that given the fact that we're now looking at the reconfiguration of Alfred Zoe and Owatambo, would it not be best for the province to consider making a comprehensive submission that would allow Flagstaff to fit into that kind of reconfiguration? Because the request came from Kamangulu and Pizana, where they were asking to be taken out of Owatambo and taken into Owatambo. And there were also additional submissions that came from Mount Fletcher that wanted to be taken to Crispin as well. We also received some requests where some people said, if you take Pizana out of Owatambo, then it must take Flagstaff as well, it must take the whole Cumberland region. And we said, with the answer to the MEC, let there be a consultation in the province with the DC for attraction. The MEC had a number of meetings with the district chairpersons and the leadership in the province last year. And ultimately, they made a submission that we now have. So we're hoping that once we interrogate the submissions received to reconfigure the district boundaries of Tresan, Alfredo, and Owatambo, we'll then be able to accommodate some of those concerns that came specifically from Flagstaff, Kaugeni, as municipalities. Because it will be difficult for us to figure out Flagstaff when there are a number of municipalities that are so interlinked in terms of functionality to Flagstaff and Kaugeni as well. The issue around water delimitation, I think we are making a statement here in the circular that communities are asked not to submit any requests to the board now on on issues around water delimitation, primarily because the water delimitation process will commence in February of 2009. We're now looking at the outer boundary of municipalities, which we are, in terms of what was presented here, are intending to hand over to the IEC all the boundaries finalized by August 2008. Now, we can then be able to revisit all the wards in the country, which I think we will, because the CFSA will now give us new figures. The IEC, after their registration process, will finish us with new registered voters, and I think the number of wards will be tempered with and changed. So, it's pointless for us. So there's nothing therefore that is going to be done with regard to water delimitation between now and February next year until the IEC certifies the voter's roll, because we're dependent on the certification of the voter's roll, which will then confirm if there has been any significant shift in the population sizes in all municipalities across the country. So that kind of data set will become very useful. So we can't really tamper with that until we know the population movements that have occurred over the past number of years.
So you're saying you first needing to clarify the outer boundaries, and then having clarified the boundaries to deal with the stats and other information about population size, and then the IEC
registers, certifies the voters in every municipality,
and then the ward.
And then the ward.
Okay, delimitation.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So there's a bunch of questions. Finished by the IEC and finalized, then the board can be able to function.
Okay. Are there time frames for sorting out this reconfiguration story in the Eastern Cape?
Yes, so on the top, there is, in terms of the timeline that we've presented here, the timeline referring to Alfred Zoe and Chris in particular.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me just say that with all the boundary redeterminations and the reconfiguration of these studies that I referred to, we have given ourselves the next 4 months, between now and August. So if you look at the timetable, we'll have to publish a certificate in the future, publish a certificate which is 30 days and 21 days, almost 2 months, and then have some kind of in-loco discussions in those villages if need be. So we have a period of 4 or 5 months that we've set ourselves to actually have that done. This circular was then the first, and the minister has been consulted, or wrote a letter to the minister, because the law requires that the board must then consult the minister if it has to work on
any recategorization of some of the stages into category A. Mm-hmm. That has now been communicated to the minister. So certainly the minister will apply his mind and give us a view as to whether he concurs with the rules that the board for in terms following. So that's the time frame which we have for that.
Let's theoretically say he disagrees. What happens?
Well,
I'm being provocative.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then the minister will have to provide a detailed submission.
Okay.
To the board as to why it's
country. Okay.
Let me give you an example for that. The minister went with the board to make a decision on the GMAs last year. We resolved on around the 10th of December. We came to this committee. The committee gave its blessings to the board's work on the GMAs. The minister wrote a letter after that and had a different view. But I wrote back in detail to explain why we can't agree with him. So we agreed that we can't change that position as a board. So the minister will have to furnish us with detailed information as to why the board's route cannot be continued with. So I think that like any other stakeholder. The next thing I think the honourable member asked a question about the question about Merafong. Certainly, I think all of us are aware that Merafong is outside our hands, but I think you're asking a question about the case that is enclosed in Kaohsiung as to whether it's Merafong. No, it's not Merafong. Merafong is a matter that is now before the Constitutional Court. An interesting dimension that has arisen is that we received a letter from the chairperson of the NCOP as well as the Speaker of Parliament in general this year, indicating that they are no longer opposing the African submission to have Merafong taken out of Northwest in respect to Gauteng, and therefore they will abide by the court decision. This was a very interesting dimension that it's all okay. That was General 208. So I discussed it with the minister, and I finished. The minister did not know about this thing at all. So last week, he wanted to get exactly the letter that was received. So I made available the letter to him, that the legislators, in the assembly and the NCOP that passed the piece of legislation to amend the constitution, they are now saying that they'll abide by the constitution. So it was very interesting to me. But that's behind the point. But it was very interesting when it comes to this case, and I think we asked a number of questions on what then this means for the case before the Constitutional Court, in view of the fact that there were these list of respondents within which we had the NCOP and the assembly as well, with the prerogative of the president and all the ministers that were cited. And now those legislated have now technically pulled out in a way. The issue about methods, the question is, will the board be able to deal with this matter? And will it be able to change the boundary? Now, we talked hard about this thing as well. I know that I was in a meeting in the Eastern Cape on Sunday, and I was asked a question about whether the board's route with regard to the categorization of the several decisions to map into the metro is a viable one. And what is the logic behind it? So I can explain that. I think there are two reasons that I want to put forward in this meeting very briefly. The first thing that we now know is that the World Bank report suggests that in 2025, the globe, the universe, is going to be 65% urbanized. That's the first thing. And the rate of urbanization taking place in the world, and both in developing and developed countries, is just unprecedented. There is more urbanization taking place in the third world countries than urbanization taking place in the first world countries. Understandably so, because the raw urban migration is happening in the third world countries. In the first world countries, it's vice versa. Now, we certainly are taking tune from the global trend. That's the first thing, even though that we've not actually discussed that as an influence. For example, when we finalize our conservation process, we'll share with the community this kind of road that is being followed by a number of these third world countries and developing countries as well. So the second point is about the issue about exclusive competencies. Now, if you look at all the secondary cities in the country, in particular the first three in the list of secondary cities, they don't share their power and functions of any district, even though they're located within districts. The Department of Freedom to Dutu Mangao, from water to stormwater management, to health, to refuse connection, they have exclusive responsibilities. Now, in 1999 and 2000, when we
we had had against a decision to have them being declared metro, we had a very strong argument about the possibility of property pockets being created outside the urban core. And we said, what can we do? Because we really have this levy that is generated from the urban center, not being shared by the surrounding areas, which are supposed to be deriving some sort of benefit when there is equitable allocation of resources derived from the levy. So we said, we really can't actually perpetuate this kind of line between the rural and urban and have the rural continue to become urban pockets and the center continue to mushroom. Anyway, that argument is actually working very strongly. The RSA levies have now gone. We no longer have RSA levies anymore. So the debate we had that some of the cities were contributing a significant portion of the RSA levies towards the development of the district, which for development and local government function, it was going to be a very good source. Now we now have the RSA replacement levy, which takes that decision about RSA levies off. Now, that's the first thing. So effectively, you're actually formalizing what already is there. Because we have now exclusive competences given to the secondary cities. They have this kind of... I think that's the third point that I want to raise. That if you look at material impact that is done by the secondary cities in districts within which they are located, it's very minimal, if there is any. Because with the equitable allocation of what was generated then, they would have capacity being shared, they would have resources being shared, you name them. But if you ask all of them one by one, some of the cities that are listening here, on the material impact at a positive level, on what is benefit of the district, it is absolutely zero. Now, why then do we delay that? Now, there's a whole bucket of reasons why we think there might be little objection to those some of the cities being considered as metro. What we might have to consider is, slightly amending the boundaries of the secondary cities to accommodate those areas that are in the fringes of those areas. The last point is that if you look at the number of informal settlements that we have in the country and the need for an urban focused municipality to deal with informal settlements, you really would want to have that kind of recalibration considered. It doesn't mean that having a metro, you're also automatically developing the ability or capacity to manage informal settlements. But it gives an opportunity for the secondary city to have a focus on the urbanization trend and informal settlements that are coming its way. So we think that we're very optimistic that there might be less objections. There will be those that are going to complain, certainly. But I think that there's going to be less. And if there's more of objections, certainly we'll have to rethink, depending on the substance of the objections and reasons, given by applicants or the objectors. The issue of provincial boundaries, which is the next issue I want to talk to, is that...
Before you do that, because I'd like us to deal with this one, Mr. In other words, you're saying, having dealt with the earlier objections, otherwise you think the three areas now fulfill the requirements for a Category A municipality in terms of conurbation, population size, central district, business district, whatever, and so on. They comply with it. Okay.
If you look at the criteria laid down in the Budget Act, actually looks at density, population size, and urbanization.
Yeah.
We think that those...
What is this village that wants to be a metro? Dragon State?
Dragon State.
Dragon State. Oh, Palace. But it's okay. Okay. No, I just wanted to get that clear because it's very clear.
Yeah.
All right.
So remember that there's a long list of people who regard themselves as what they was called after the metro.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there's going to be a lot of municipalities that are going to ask the question, why not us? What's the thing about it as well? On the issue of provincial boundaries, the question is, who is responsible for this? I think that Hilary said, in our response to the applicants, we said this matter is outside our responsibility. It's a matter that is now in the purview of local assembly. But the primary executive authorities are the Minister of Justice and local government, the CPLG. So we refer those submissions or requests to the two departments. I think we did report to the committee two years ago that I wrote, or the board wrote to the Minister of Justice and the Minister of Local Government, or PLG, advising on the list of submissions that we received that border on provincial boundaries, and said that these matters can be dealt with. Subsequent to those submissions, we had a meeting with the Minister last year in Show 7, and the minister and the fine who agree that this matter is outside your hands, I think it's also important that this is the advice of the white paper review process. That given the fact that we now have white paper, now their concerns might be accommodated when the provincial boundaries get redrawn. Because some people complain that, in between two provinces, the boundaries. So if you look at the, this is what I said last year, then we are still hoping that the white paper would actually ripen as a move towards the 2008. So it's also the responsibility to refer them to the national minister. And I think as a parliamentarian will be asked, certainly, by a number of people about what can be done. So people are going to be asking, they'll be asking the right authority as well as to how best to manage problems in social policy. The issue about the capacity assessments and quality checks, the question is, do MSCs really make those reports? We produce and deliver to MSCs provincial, district and local capacity reports for policies, and then we produce national and social reports 2 months later. Quite frankly, I must say that I don't think that the provinces really make use of these reports. If they do, they are not telling us if they're actually making use of these reports. Now, so you have to get feedback from provincial MSCs on the reports that we make available to them on municipal capacity. 99% of all instances, this is more accepted by provinces and without any objection. And I'm not saying that they must be objected to, but you'd want to be advised.
Some engagement.
You want to be advised by provinces on areas where they think that there's an error in discussion. Disagreement on some level of capacity. Now, what I suggest is that there's possibly no assessment of capacity done by provincial agencies and provinces, such that when they receive both reports, that covers up the rest of the welfare reports. That must be done by them. And they will actually take that into view. Whether they ultimately use that as a base for capacity development program for the different board came all together, we don't know, because in some instances, as the report said, our capacity report shows, there are some municipalities that have consistently been underperforming. Interestingly, in the first thing, there are 6 municipalities that for the past 6 years have shown the same level of performance with little improvement. Now, the question that I would ask is, if the same report has made of the MSCs, and you have this kind of pattern that continues without any improvement, then you would suggest that possibly, that's not the one problem that you had, almost 6 districts having the same problem, about consistent incapacity over a 6-year period. Now, I think there's a variation in several provinces in terms of the capacity that we find in locality. So I think they do receive the report. The other thing I don't think they engage municipalities who are supposed to have their power and functions adjusted. Because the capacity reports are to be used by provincial government departments to see if there is a need to adjust power and functions. Because these reports come in December, you'd find in provinces capacity adjustments done in July, even after, long after the IGP has been adopted. That means they have not been factored into the IGP review process, the budget review process. They are not part of the newly adopted IT for municipality, which means there's a clear disjunction between what we produce as capacity reports and what gets fed into the capacity development program of municipalities and the ITP and budget processes. I think the question is, how do you define municipal capacity? There's only one piece of legislation, unfortunately, in the country that defines municipal capacity, that is the municipal budget edge. And I think it refers to the financial and administrative ability of a municipality to fulfill its commercial objectives. Now, we take tune from that, and we further expand it. We would look at the overall objectives set up in Chapter 7 of the Constitution, the 5 objectives of local government. We then look at the power and functions, both Chapter 4 and 5, as to the extent which municipalities perform those functions in detail, and use our own definitions. Now, you'll remember that there isn't any definition or document in the kind that defines power and functions up to now for the past 7 years. But the board developed in 2003 a document that sought to define public functions. So we use that as a base to begin to understand exactly the intricacies involved in the performance of functional services and what do they really entail. So we should have expanded the definition from the first act to accommodate matters that are incidental to our responsibility. The question is the other question is about vacant posts in the organization. That the board has or depicts that the presentation depicts that there is about 8 vacancies. I think the manager will talk to that as well. But let me just say that there has been a high level of resignations by staff. So there's a high level of staff mobility out and in and coming to the organization as well. So by the end of January of this year, that is the picture we had. But I think there was also a delay to begin to refill, to fill up this position, primarily because there was a process of the manager was driving on the restructuring of the institution, of the organization that he gave the master plan, and subsequent to what he submitted, the board approved a restructuring of the organization. So we now have a new staff structure, as the report actually indicates. I think there's a comment that there's no lead in the delegation. The chair also indicated there's no lead in the delegation. I must say that in terms of the employment equity plan of the organization, besides what you see here as men only, we're 50% female in the management and 50% male in the management. The fact that the manager and ourselves and myself happen to be here doesn't suggest that it is rugby club. It's not a rugby club. The head of GIS is female. The head of human resources and management is female. The head of the chief financial officer is male, and the head of research is male. So we have those two, that kind of balance that we have. The deputy chair of the board is female. So the deputy chair of the board is female. So we have a fair balance of the gender in the organization. The last thing is in relation to Section 21, Section 21 decision. For the disabled. I think I'm not sure if we did succeed. I'll give you a lot of explain that data after I've finished it. I don't think we actually succeeded at a given time to secure a certain committee, but I think we don't have that. The Section 21 notice decision. Now, Section 21 simply indicates that the board has decided. But the board decides and therefore call for objection. In order to publish the Section 26 notice, which is a notice that is intended to solicit public opinion. Once the board receives, digests, and then, what's those submissions, we then publish a determination notice in Section 21. But this is not the last notice. It's a notice that expresses to the public. You still have 30 days within which you can object to the board's decision now. So what appears in the circular is Section 21 decision. As decisions that still have a period of 30 days for the public to make their own comments. And that will be followed by Section 21, Subsection 5, which should now go to the IEC for the IEC to express their own comments. Thanks.
Chair, let me just fill in on various issues that where the chairperson hasn't done. On the vacant position issue, as the chairperson rightly said, there was a process to review the structure in order to empower the board to deal with the challenges that are coming up that we foresee. The board did approve a reviewed structure quite recently, and the process is underway actually to fill in those vacancies so that we are ready to tackle the challenges that we see coming our way. So very soon thereafter, we're going to find a situation where we have a better working structure, and also the position, the vacancies have been taken care of. We had at one stage a disabled database administrator, but unfortunately he has been resigned, and we have had a rethink of the position since then. So, but since then we haven't really been able to secure a disabled employee as such. But it is no reflection on our work. We believe our work can be done even by disabled people, so that's not the case. Now, can I just go back to the issue that was raised earlier by Nkosinongonya about over budgeting? If you look at the 2 years that we are talking about, they refer to the ward limitation, and with our experience of war delimitation process, we had to put forward in our strategic planning a figure that we believe would allow us to carry out that process properly. And what it came up to is the figure that you see in the thing. That is why the CFO was saying that we must still therefore engage the National Treasury and of course the Department of Federal Local Government on these realities and do that. We remain positive, Chairperson. The CFO might not have mentioned this, but in his first month with us, he did engage National Treasury with respect to the 2008-09 budget, the year starting on the 1st of April. And the result of that engagement was that Treasury gave us an additional 3 million rand on the 2008-09. So we remain positive. We remain positive that National Treasury, we'll get to understand us better, and they'll listen to us better. We take it for granted. We are confident that the department understands what it is that we are about. But what we engage with National Treasury, the fact that they were able to give us a 3 million, means that they are able to understand us. It means our engagement can only improve, and on that basis, we believe that we can move on. But obviously, we'll keep relying on your assistance as the committee to help us in that regard. Thank you, sir.
I cannot say in my province or my constituency if I don't ask this one. I come from the Vala, just out of interest. I know that my region and my municipality consistently have been classified under those municipalities that had a capacity problem. But on the other side, and I would like to find out as to what would make Mfuleni or Sidibeng not to be a metro. But the last one is one big one that, do you know anything about the Gauteng city region in the light of whatever you're saying as you come from Gauteng? And I think this can be shared by that. We have to find out. Thank you.
Let me start with the GDR concept, the Gauteng city region. The Gauteng city region concept was introduced to us by, or through a meeting that we had with the MSA in Gauteng. And I say it was merely a request for us to look at into the feasibility of what the province was working on, was thinking about, before initially was developed into this police regime that Gauteng seems to have. We expressed reservations about the route we followed then, because already we discussed our provinces. So I said to them, there are a few things that must be considered here before we pursue this matter. One, because I think the question is, are we aware? Yes, we are aware. But I think there are a number of concerns that you expressed. Firstly was that you just can't have a GCR concept that gets developed and ripened in a province without taking into account the intergovernmental relations framework, meaning that you must have the buy-in from the health government. So there are serious national implications. You can't have a GCR which is provincialized and which has national implications without the national government actually buying into that. That's the first thing. The second thing is that in view of the discussion we have about the unfolding discussion about the number of provinces, you might be wasting resources to work on the global region in a province whose boundary may change. So we said this boundary that we have, which is cutting, is not likely to remain as it is in the next 3 years. So why waste resources? And so we said some of that must be considered. But I think we said legally it's possible for us to take the three districts in Gauteng and the three metros and create one mega city. It's very possible. There's nothing that prohibits us from a legal point of view to assist the total government culture Gauteng to pursue the GCR concept. So that's what we would be able to. They then went ahead to do that. So it's a process that we've been following that we are aware of. Okay, the next thing. The Mfuleni. Yes, it's very close to Mfuleni. You know, the one thing I think that came to mind is in the list of secondary cities, which are the most important that could be classified or categorized, and said, while Mfuleni is in the list of these provinces, we don't think that we would want to introduce the country into a trauma center, the transformation trauma center. Now,
Because if you go big, with the time that we have, we might not be able to have all of them recategorized. And if we do, we might have a number of problems that the board may, could not foresee that may be encountered as well. So we did not. I know the influence, the housing brought this matter to my attention last week when they read the circular. They then called and said, what about influence? But you're going to have a number of, some of the cities I said earlier on, that are going to make the same call. You're going to have a number of cities who don't, Bombela will possibly the next week say that it will qualify the metro. You know, there's going to be this option. But do we really want to go big that big? Have all the 25 cities together. We don't think so. Primarily because none of them meet the criteria. The level of organization taking place in the same municipalities is not in the same. And I think I know fully the way it's coming, where they come from, because they were once a metro. That area, in fact, was once had a metro center. So they tend to think that after all, there was a metro there, therefore there's no way, for no reason, that it can't be a metro. But let me just say that it's a matter that is not in the list now. Because we certainly want to go big.
It seems the trend is better for categorizing big cities into metros, and I don't hear you talking of cities. In my province, in Limpopo, it was only once sometimes in the 80s when Pek Botha came down and declared Pietersburg Polokwane a city. By that time, it was a size of, it was not even bigger than what Itanini is today, but Itanini is still called a town, and that one, by virtue of being called a city sometimes by Pek Botha, the rest are disadvantaged. I want to check with you, because the trend is, ever since 1994, I haven't heard, ever since we changed from the Town Clerk Act into this new legislation, I've never heard of a place being upgraded to a status of a city. Everything goes to a metro, but here in between, towns are no longer promoted to a comfortable status like city of Toyando, and no longer towns, because those cities were named cities while they were still counting the number of water meters, electrified houses, number of streets, and so on. So are you still on the program of upgrading small towns into cities? Thank you.
You know, in 1999, we discovered when we were redrawing the part of the country that there were so many areas called towns that were in fact informal settlements. In the country. But then, the previous regime had accorded the status of having a municipality with a town council or community board, this kind of thing. So the number of these self-government entities that were created to manage this kind of informal settlement. In the past, Cosmo Gonyana will tell you, we had a number of municipalities that even 10 years after, or 12 years now, you still don't get a sense that this is an urban center. And yet, 15 years ago, they had a municipality on their own, with no revenue base whatsoever. So we then, in the redrawing of boundaries, took all these kind of centers that we term urban cores of, with the potential to have some kind of economy, that we term as economic nodes, and put them together to create municipalities. The second point in line with what raising, I don't remember, is that there is no chapter, there is no paragraph, any piece of legislation that refers to a promotion from a town to a city. So there isn't. It's not legally permissible in terms of current legislation, so the board works on the category of municipalities, which are A, B, and C. A, metro, B, district, and local authority. That is the category. So there's no room for us to have all of a sudden a city picture. The legislation doesn't allow them. The fact that the municipality would refer to its name or call itself Buffalo City that's a name given by the by the residents to that organization, but it doesn't deal with what the state mandate to do. So there is no promotion route premises.